Last case on our docket this morning is Disciplinary Counsel versus Donnell. The Chief Justice and Justice Resnick have recused themselves from this case. We're pleased to have sitting for Chief Justice Thomas Moyer, the Honorable Stephen R. Shaw of the 3rd District Court of Appeals. Welcome, Judge Shaw. And G. Gary Tyack, Judge Tyack of the 10th District Court of Appeals, sitting for Justice Alice Roby Resnick. Counsel may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. I'm the respondent, pro se, in this case, the court report stated that the allegations of disciplinary rule violations against the respondent concerned his activity in pre-hearing before the Honorable Martin K. Weaver, judge, in the summer and fall of 1994. What I'm here to talk in the front of the court about this morning does not concern the merits of the case. It concerns what I believe to be two substantial violations of respondents' due process rights as laid out by not only the civil rules here in Ohio, which apply to an attorney disciplinary case, but by the Supreme Court, which in 1968 held that, quote, in proceeding to suspend a professional license, the must comport to the requirements of due process of law. And the requirements of due process of law is, I believe, important for this court to look at before any of the merits that we look at. There were two, what I believe to be substantial violations. And one occurred just 56 hours and 20 minutes before the disciplinary hearing itself. Second violation, as we find it believes, occurred at the beginning of the hearing itself, before the panel. Regarding the requirements of due process of law, I would point out to the court two rules, civil rules, which would be Rule 7b2 and Rule 12. Rule 7b2 requires the court, when it's not going to have an oral hearing on the motion, to give notice by rule or by order to the parties. It is not going to do so, and instead will give the parties an opportunity to submit written statements in support and written statements in opposition. This never happened in respondent's case. 66 hours and 20 minutes before the hearing was to be held, the Honorable Secretary of the Board, Jonathan Martin, called the respondent on the phone shortly before 5 o'clock in the afternoon after the court of the day and informed the respondent for the first time that attorney David C. Cups of the District Attorney had signed an order quashing the subpoenas of three public officials. Respondent never given any notice that there wouldn't be a moral hearing on the motion to quash. Further, respondent never given any opportunity to submit written statements in opposition. The second, but respondent believes to be substantial violation of his due process rights, came at the beginning of the hearing itself. The chairman, the Honorable B.O.P. Morley Judge, stated, in paraphrasing here, that there never been a motion made before in this case. He was going to make it at this point in time, at the hearing. That was, on behalf of the panel, he made a motion to quash the subpoenas of two additional public officials whom respondent had subpoenaed and who were waiting in the hallway right outside the present time, ready to testify. And it was less than 3 minutes from the time that the chairman gave the respondent notice of the motion, then he ruled on the motion. Then he turned, he looked toward the respondent, and said, and I quote, therefore, the motion of the panel to quash the subpoenas of all the appellate judges is hereby sustained. Now, if you wish to respond, you may do so. End of quote. Responded by objecting and stating that, certainly, and this is quote, clearly, judges in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeal would have to be considered experts. Still, it was denied by the chair. Then the chairman of the panel turned, looked and responded and said, "Are you ready to proceed?" And once again, I want to quote from the record, respondent replied, "Just so the record reflects my objections today." All told, respondent objected 5 times on due process grounds, as opposed to the motion to quash, which was granted. One gone 6 hours or so before, and one with less than 3 minutes notice at the hearing itself. The one more quotation from the text to support the views is, I looked at the panel and said, "I believe," I'm quoting here, "I believe this is an issue for the Supreme Court of Ohio or the Supreme Court of the United States. I'd like to reserve a couple minutes at the end to respond if necessary. If you have any questions, I'd be certainly happy to."
So you want to argue your case today solely on the alleged due process violations,
yes,
without talking about the merits of the case?
Yes, Your Honor. I didn't bring my witnesses to it here. I think it would be, which I asked, by the way, at the earlier hearing, I asked the panel to stay the 2 hours.
Okay, well, it's your case. I guess you're entitled to do that. You can reserve your time. Thank you, Mr. Donnell.
Thank you.
Ms. Brown.
May it please the court, my name is Lori Brown for the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. I'll address, first of all, the respondent's due process objections. Mr. Donnell subpoenaed 3 witnesses, Justice Moyer, Jeffrey Stern, and Rick Dove, approximately 1 week before the hearing. 2 of the witnesses, Chief Justice Moyer and Rick Dove, were served on the Friday, 1 week before the hearing. The motion to quash was filed by the Attorney General's office that same day. The motion to quash was based on such issues as that the high government officials were subject to an undue burden. The respondent had made no showing of what personal knowledge any of the witnesses might have of his alleged misconduct so that they should be subject to personal appearance at the disciplinary hearing to give testimony. He also showed no special need for their testimony 1 week before the hearing, no reason why he didn't take their depositions if they had factual knowledge, personal knowledge. So the motion to quash was granted by David Cupps, member of the panel, on the Monday before the hearing. I don't doubt that the respondent, that his knowledge came from Jonathan Marshall via telephone call. I don't doubt that. He said at the hearing that he didn't get notice in the mail. However, part of that is due to the fact that he did not subpoena the witnesses until 1 week before his hearing. Secondly, with the issue of Judge Mel Resnick and Judge Shirk from the Court of Appeals, they were present at the hearing. However, the panel sua sponte quashed their subpoenas and gave the respondent a chance at the hearing to put on the record, to proffer testimony as to what types of things the judges would have testified to. They continuously asked him what they were going to testify to, what personal knowledge did they have. What the respondent could offer was that they had read the record, they had read the transcript. Well, the panel members had read the transcript, I'd read the transcript, that the judges could not offer any more testimony, and those are the specific factual issues that the panel continuously asked respondent to put on the record. What would the testimony have been? He could not do that.
We're talking about the transcript of the underlying case.
Yes, exactly. And that's the reason that the motion to quash sua sponte was granted. The panel also gave him a chance to speak to the motion to quash, which was of Jeffrey Stern, Chief Justice Moyer, and Rick Dove. And he at the hearing, the respondent could again not offer any evidence that was going to be set forth by any of those witnesses if they had in fact been compelled to attend a disciplinary hearing. I think that one other issue here is that he also subpoenaed Judge Margaret Weaver to testify at the hearing as to disciplinary counsel. Judge Margaret Weaver did testify at the hearing on direct examination by relator. Respondent did not cross-examine her. He did not call her on direct examination, but yet he wants to argue now that he was going to, in fact, examine witnesses they had under subpoena when there was one there and he didn't question her. And so his due process arguments, I believe, fail for that reason, as well as the reason that the underlying case that he cites, which is the Raffolo case, decided by the United States Supreme Court, the issues in that case were the respondent did not receive notice of the charges against him. In this case, that's not the issue. He knew, respondent knew, every single charge that was going to be brought against him. And in the other cases, he was not, in Raffolo, he was not given an opportunity to be heard on the issues, present his witnesses. In this case, respondent, about a week prior to the hearing, sent Relator a list of witnesses, a list of 12 witnesses. Relator didn't call, or respondent didn't call any of those witnesses. So he was given an opportunity to know the charges and to be heard on each and every charge. His due process rights were not.
Okay, let's move to the merits of the case. We've read the briefs and we understand the alleged or the actual egregiousness of his actions.
Yes.
My concern is we have you recommending 2 years suspension, and then within 60 days following the imposition of the order, he should be evaluated by a psychiatrist, and the board then coming along and saying 1 year all stayed.
Yes.
I mean, there's quite a variation there that we don't often see. Would you like to talk about that?
There's also a variation between what the panel recommended. They recommended a year off with 6 months stayed. They clearly found that some time off was justified. Relator recommends 2 years off based completely, and that was a recommendation even prior to the hearing, even prior to any evidence that may have been presented by the respondent at the hearing, and none was presented. Relator's position was based on the documents filed in the varying courts by the respondent. Documents which called Chief Justice Moyer the fox. Documents which called Judge Margaret Weaver a liar, a blatant liar. Documents which contained vulgar, obscene language. Transcripts which showed that the respondent did not understand court rules, was not capable of controlling his cross-examination or his direct examination of his own witnesses. There are two instances in this case where the panel found violations that the board did not find. Those instances, first of all, are violations of 6101. The panel found a violation the board did not. Relator believes there is a violation. First of all, the board apparently either overlooked or ignored the testimony of an individual named Kathy Armbruster. Ms. Armbruster testified in the domestic relations court and in the disciplinary hearing that the respondent said to her, "The only reason I'm doing this," meaning filing motions in his domestic case, "was to increase his wife's attorney fees." He did not believe, nor did he want, any of the things he was asking for. He was trying to harass and make his ex-wife.
Counsel, this is a curious case at best. The activities quite unprofessional in many respects in terms of the representation. But we allow pro se litigants all the time. Now, if he were not a lawyer, he could come into court and done all of this, right?
Yes. As far as the court would be.
And is part of this going to be a rule that an attorney cannot represent herself or herself in the dissolution of a marriage, for example?
Oh, no, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that...
I mean, that seemed to me to be the gravamen of a number of these complaints. Now, granted, once he undertook it, his behavior was less than professional.
Yes.
In many respects, but I thought the underlying charge was that he shouldn't have, he was too close to be, he shouldn't have undertaken it to all those things. And it seemed to me much of what went on here could have been controlled by the trial judge simply by reining him in, fining him, making him pay her attorney fees.
There's an order for attorney fees.
Okay, all of those things. rather than get this mix of stuff in a protracted discipline case?
Well, I think two issues. First of all, the issue of whether or not a lawyer can represent himself in a case like the Messi case.
Let me finish up. I guess the thought that's nagging at me is it looked to me like maybe the other lawyer said, well, I'll get even with him. In other words, the other lawyer had this information that this attorney is using the fact that he's an attorney and using the profession to run up her attorney fees. And so it's in addition to just going after financial sanctions, as this attorney for doing that, he said, well, I'll turn all these rules that we have on discipline against him and use that as a club back.
I don't think that's at all accurate, with all due respect. The opposing attorney, whose name is Walter Selle, testified at the disciplinary hearing, and I believe that if the transcript is reviewed and if you review correspondence from Mr. Selle to Mr. Donnell throughout the domestic matter, Mr. Selle has been very respectful to Mr. Donnell. In fact, he wrote him a letter and asked Mr. Donnell not to contact his ex-wife. And we're not talking about contacts like, can I pick the kids up? We're talking about letters to his wife saying, this is the court order, this is what the court order says, you need to follow this order.
It did seem that perhaps Judge Weaver was way too respectful to this gentleman because it was an attorney.
I think Judge Weaver gave him every benefit of the doubt. I believe that she did. She testified that she did at the disciplinary hearing. She was very patient with him for a period of about a year. She did not get off the case until November of 95, which is past the time when we filed our complaint. Our complaint was already in the works.
Isn't the government to your complaint, not that he represented himself, but that he used his unique position as an attorney to abuse the system, to harass his wife? I mean, had he not been an attorney, he would not have known how to file all these numerous motions and all the back and forth and all the groomwork itself. Isn't that more than just what you're going after?
That's very definitely it is. For example, he filed more than 25 motions in the space of less than a year. One day in particular, in July of 1994, he filed 4 motions and requests.
So how do we write on this case so that people who happen to be lawyers and want to save themselves either the embarrassment or the expense of bringing in someone else, if they behave appropriately, can still do that and handle this kind of behavior?
I think that this case can draw a line in terms of, this is a somewhat unusual case because when you examine the record, some of the things that the respondent did in this case, I would hope that no lawyer would do on behalf of a client. The irrelevant questions, the harassing questions, for example, he asked his ex-wife when she was on the stand if she knew
what
pedophile
was. But if we're going to start disciplining lawyers for irrelevant questions, we're going to greatly reduce the membership in the organized bar.
I'm not suggesting that either. What I am suggesting is that it was question number, that's just one question I can remember, question number 96, you know, after Judge Weaver has said, I'm not going to allow that, I'm not going to allow that, over and over and over, and he continues to do it and do it, and I would hope that wouldn't be allowed if he had a client that wasn't himself.
So to lay down the black letter law here, we're going to have to develop great detail, perhaps more detail than normal, with the facts of the unique facts of this case.
I believe so, yes. I think that the panel's report went through each disciplinary rule that they believed was violated and cited specific instances of the times it was violated. For example, the respondent himself admitted that he lost all objectivity in this case, yet nevertheless he continued his pleadings, he continued to make. Another example is the respondent's abuse of the system. For example, obviously, not to draw unneeded attention, but Justice Resnick and Justice Moyer are not on this case because the respondent believes they're biased against him. I don't know, he has alleged that from the beginning, as he has alleged that Judge Weaver is biased, Judge Abood, anytime a court renders a decision that is not in his favor, he comes down in pleadings and says he believes that the court is biased against him.
Counselor, were there any violations in the context of this particular case at this point in time that were not directly related to his domestic relations proceedings?
No.
So all we're dealing with at this point is whether the unprofessional conduct that he engaged in the context of his own divorce case is something for which he should receive some sort of suspension.
It's post-divorce. It's post-dissolution. It began with respondents filing of a motion for custody of his children, which he admitted that he did not really want. That's how it started.
As somebody who did 15 years of this kind of work and has had the misfortune to be a party in a domestic relations matter, I would just say that I'd hate to have my conduct throughout my life judged based on some things I did or did not do when I'm going through a contested divorce or the contested proceedings thereafter. If we're solely in that context, I mean, why not just say if you're in a contested domestic relations proceeding, you can't represent yourself, and then just let that take care of it?
I don't believe that we need to go that far. I believe that this is a case, first of all, let's take another example. The respondent has represented other people, and he's never been here before. He's never been up here before. He's never been disciplined. But in this particular case, it happened to be his domestic relations case. I don't know whether this was a land use case or something if we would be here. But he was representing himself and violating disciplinary rules. I don't think that happens in every pro se domestic case or every pro se case, whether it's domestic or, public records. It's just not in this particular case. These particular facts, all the pleadings, all the questions that were asked during the hearings, his lack of respect for the trial court, his lack of respect for courts in general, I think you'll find that everywhere in this record.
If he had been representing somebody else rather than himself and had done these exact same things before the other party, would we be here today?
Definitely so. Definitely.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Thank you.
Mr. Donnell, you may take Mr. Respond.
The reason I didn't cross him was having Judge Weaver. I thought her testimony was fairly good of its own. Twice she was required to by Chairman Marley as to those three seating with all of the three here. Whether she believed, whether Judge Weaver believed, that respondent did anything to violate disciplinary rules. As he said, first of all, she said, well, she wasn't not aware of all of this rules, and this is true, probably a lot of judges. But she could not come up with anything except something which happened 5 months after the last amendment complaint was put in, and I had filed my response to that, which came in November of 1995. I submitted before, 6 days before a hearing, before Judge Rubin, this is another hearing, that she disqualified herself, that I've been there for her, conduct the hearing. I think this is a quote from my plea, according to Penny Sage. Penny Sage was a copy of the Army Chief Justice Waters' speech on public television in December of 1994. Basically, it said it was a long speech. That the judges have to be concerned about perception, not just reality. And it followed a poll where some people in Ohio that were bold perceived that maybe some judges weren't, maybe their decisions went in the direction in which the contributions to their campaign chest came. But be that as it may, I have always maintained a good respect for the court. I was here in 1984 with the case. And I resent any implication that I don't show respect for the legal system. My dad was attorney. And I resent any implication that I said that Judge Weaver was a blatant liar. No, I just used the filing that you filed in this court to the assistant administrator, where she denied, or she stated, that she had never been accused before of being moved it toward, you know, sent the case that I had brought up before Chief Justice Moore was to disqualify her in another case, the young girl, okay? And she stated she had never before been asked by an attorney to disqualify for the same reason, because she had practiced law for 10 years with the attorney on the other side, in my case, with this younger girl, and in the case where it came before this court, I mean, it came before Chief Justice Moore. And so I just said that, you know, it was a lie. Well, at the hearing, she admitted that if you want to call it a lie, it was, but then counsel came back to maybe rehabilitate her and says, well, we're just mistaken. She said, sure, I accept that too. I have no right, Judge Winger, believe it or not. My niece went to school for, she taught math to her before she became a lawyer. But I'm maybe too young old when it comes to defending my client's rights, especially when I'm involved, and I shouldn't have done it. I don't have the money. My average income, according to the record, shows I've made less than $8,000 the last several years. I've never been aggressive making money. And also, the record shows, I believe, that I probably give 20-30% of my time for free, but I do it because I love the work. And I'm not looking for money. But I did have property, very honestly. No mortgages, I could put a mortgage on property and retain John Hall for Fremont, who I consulted before I started representing myself three times before Judge Weaver. I should have done it. In hindsight, I should never represent myself. Because you do lose objectivity. If I disagree with first statement, I lost all. It's different in the world to say all of anything except the new world. And it probably was going to pay taxes. But so, yes, I did lose some of it. In case I was be the first one to get it. But I do have a great respect for Judge Weaver. I, in fact, wish she was back in the final case again. Since that time, she's been replaced with an out-of-county judge, which has to be the case. And I would just as soon see Judge Weaver back. I have nothing against her. I didn't cross-examine her because the only thing she found that she thought wasn't right was put in that motion to have her disqualify herself. She thought I should have gone directly to the Supreme Court than there in Sussex County. And I can understand that too. If I knew she would have liked that, I'd done anything. Once again, I gave a warning. I didn't say disqualify yourself because this and that. I said, well, conduct yourself according to that speech, which Chief Justice Moore said, which had to do with my perception, not about reality. By the way, my ex-wife's attorney did not file a complaint. First, it doesn't count in any regard to this court until after I had filed my appeal on attorneys in that case, in which I think it's
Thank you, Mr. Now. That's it. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. The marshal, please adjourn the court.
All rise.